Hello, everybody. Good evening. Welcome to the Scottish Rugby Podcast brought to you by the Scottish Rugby Blog. I am Cammy Black. It's the fourth episode of our British and Irish Lions specials that we're doing during the Lions tour. We're coming up to the first test this Saturday. It was all going swimmingly. I had a really nice podcast schedule all mapped out for this week. So tonight we were going to speculate on who's going to be picked for the test squad. And that'd give us two clear days before they actually announced it. And then we were going to do like a live reaction afterwards to talk about the test squad. But then everything's been messed up because they brought the squad announcement forward and it's been leaked. So that balls that up. So we're going to limp on regardless. And there's been a fair bit of news swimming about anyway that we'll talk about. To join me in dissecting the news, we have Ian Hay. Good evening, Ian.
Hello, Cammy.
We've got Johnny McGinty. Hello, Johnny.
Hello, how are you doing?
We've got Craig Manson. Craig, who's very generously joined us tonight, given some of the news we're going to be talking about. Good evening, Craig.
Thank you, Cammy. Nice to see you. Hello, everyone.
And to balance things out, because I couldn't let Ian and Johnny just have lots of fun, we've brought Rory along just kind of like to give Craig some backup. Hello, Rory.
Hello. Am I going to be serious? I thought Craig and Johnny were both talking about Edinburgh, and I could just pretending that I know what I'm talking about.
When Johnny talks about Edinburgh, nobody listens to him anyway.
All right, that's fine.
Designated fun sponge, Rory. Though.
Yeah, that's me. Just tear and stop us getting sued.
See, I could have see using the word fun sponge would have segued beautifully into our previous sponsors, but I'm not going to bother with that because they're not our sponsors anymore. If you are want to watch us live, we are currently live on YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, and Facebook. If you want to listen to this podcast without adverts, you can sign up to our Patreon at patreon.com/ Scottish Rugby Podcast for £3 a month. That also gets you exclusive content and access to our super secret social media group. Good evening to everyone watching live with us as well. We've got Andy Lone with us, regular viewer / listener. Good evening to Andy. If you want to jump in with any comments tonight, we'll pick out some of the best ones to chat about as well. We'll start with what I'm going to call Coxit. Coxit. It sounds nice. I like the way it almost rolls off the tongue.
Is that not your backbone?
it's the pain in the arse, Craig, and that's it. So Richard Cockerell, rather surprisingly, although looking back on it maybe inevitably, has left Edinburgh. It's a mutual parting of the ways to allow him to pursue other opportunities. Craig, we've talked on the podcast before about your views on Richard Cockerell and maybe whether or not Edinburgh were progressing under him or things had slowed a little bit. Was that a surprise to you?
The last time we talked about it, I said there's something going to have to change. And I actually thought it was going to be someone below him because he had a contract through till 2023. So I thought it was somebody else that was going to go. But obviously, the man himself has gone. It does just mimic his Leicester Tigers sort of exit, although it was in a shorter time than his time at Leicester Tigers. But it's kind of just comes in, makes a huge difference. Unfortunately, he didn't win anything with Edinburgh, but he won plenty with Leicester. And then the old way of bludgeoning and punching your way through to winning within either the Premiership or in the Pro 14 or the Ultimate Rugby Championship that it's now called isn't the way. Or people can read it a lot quicker and the game has outgrown him. And I think it's got to that point where, it's not surprising, but it was surprising, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah. I think, Rory, it's maybe, I don't want to speculate too much, I'll be sued, but it seems unusual the way this has come about, because if it was the SRU's decision, you would think, given he's got a contract till 2023, there would be some money exchanging hands the other one way. And if it was that an opportunity had presented itself that he wanted to pursue, that the SRU would be getting money the other way. So the fact that it's been mutual would suspect there have been some issues that we aren't party to, although John Barclay has written in the Times today about some of them, that have kind of forced a kind of mutual agreement that So what was it when Gwyneth Paltrow split up with the lad for Coldplay.
Conscious
uncoupling. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. They've had a conscious uncoupling in which neither party has to pay the other any money.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they were, from the wording of the press release where they agreed to come to an agreement, it sounds like they decided at the end of last season that it wasn't continuing, but this being the SRU, they then decided to leave it till the week after preseason starts to announce it, even though it seems like they knew about it. Either that or Hamish Watson's phoned up from South Africa and says, look, I know it's bad here with the COVID, but I'm not coming back if Cockers is taking preseason.
There's people actually rioting in the streets in South Africa, but I'm not willing to leave the country unless he goes. Johnny, I think there was maybe a little bit of envy, I suppose, from Glasgow fans that Edinburgh had got Cockerell, someone of his kind of calibre. I know you had Dave Rennie for a little bit, and we know how that worked out. But was it a surprise to you that Cockerell went?
I think, yeah, it was obviously coming. Surprised at when it came. The other thing that you mentioned, Dave Rennie, is that I'm beginning to suspect that this might be a Pro 14 problem or a URC now problem, that the turnover of coaches, head coaches in the Pro 14 that go to seek a new opportunity is, outside of Leinster, it's unbelievable. I mean, even in just the last 5 years, we've lost Townsend, then we lost Rennie. Edinburgh have now lost Cockerell. Scarlett's lost Brad Moore, and then they got rid of Glenn Delaney, and then they lost Dwayne Peel already because he's going to Cardiff. Corrett lost Pat Lamb to the Premiership. It just seems to be that most top coaches see the Pro 14 as quite a quick stepping stone. And I think the league as a whole needs to have a think about what they're going to do about that, because we can't keep up with that turnover of coaches all the time.
It's almost like you get the World Health Organization to declare a pandemic of pursuing other opportunities. Ian, I mean, maybe that. I mean, you know, we've talked last week about the, you know, Jay-Z's takeover of the URC and the way that's going. So maybe if this does become the coolest, greatest rugby union league in the world, then that might help. But it's not. It's maybe not helpful that it's another coach gone. And
well, as well as the cool, it's going to bring the cash. And, you know, like Johnny said, it's a stepping stone. You know, he was talking about coaches. We just need to think about all the players that Glasgow in particular have lost. There's just not enough money to keep people in. As long as they're getting progression, whereas we don't know exactly what's happened with Richards. But, you know, obviously I've sat on a lot of press conferences last season, and last season was unprecedented circumstances, but no, he seemed like he was happy enough, and he did quite often say he was, you know, he was building a project. But you know, professional sport is what it is. You know, it's a results based business, and last season Edinburgh were, I think, statistically the worst. Well, they were the second worst team behind Treviso, who then went and bloody winner the Rainbow Cup. So it was a bit of a surprise.
Treviso, who are actually technically now better than the British and Irish Lions, because they beat South Africa. Bulls beat South Africa A. South Africa A beat British Irish and Lions, but who beat the Bulls? Bennett and Treviso, greatest team in the world.
Yeah.
get them playing the Crusaders. That's it.
Craig, John Barclay wrote in the Times today, it's behind a paywall, but we'll talk about what he said anyway, which he was fairly damning about Richard Cockerell. I think he kind of like said he was positive in the kind of turnaround he'd made at the club and instilling values, but that that the blood and thunder had continued and, you know, players hadn't been given a chance. And he kind of gave a couple of examples of like Rory Dodge, who've gone elsewhere and done well for themselves. I think when John Barclay left, there was a kind of perception that it was all John Barclay kind of throwing his toys out the pram, and you know, maybe it was him that hadn't been able to kind of adjust to the Edinburgh way of working. But reading that article, and now given the way that Cockerell's time at Edinburgh has come to an end, you do wonder whether or not, you know, there have been issues behind the scenes that we haven't been aware of.
There has to be something there. You know, when Barkley left or retired, we all kind of rolled our eyes and thought he's going for clickbait with some of his comments that he made when he retired because he was looking for a job. But then you see Matt Scott, who was performing incredibly well with Edinburgh, moving away and saying he didn't want to go. We then talk about two British and Irish Lions who have signed for Worcester when we're paying big money to keep Jamie Ritchie in a long-term contract within Edinburgh. Now, obviously, Jamie Ritchie is an SRU project player, but on the other side of things, if you're going to pay good money for Mish and for Jamie Ritchie, you would expect him to be keeping Doohan, keeping Rory Sutherland, who are both incredibly high performers for the club. So there was something going on. And then we started talking about how the, even when we had all of our superstar players back, the attack was so blunt, and we were the soft underbelly of Edinburgh was being exposed on a regular basis. There was something going on. And you know, let me clarify my point. He's done a huge amount for Edinburgh. He's really taken Edinburgh and turned them upside down, shaken them until they've actually seen sense and got on with the job. The problem you have is that, as you say, no leadership group. It's all Cocker's way or the highway. That's not going to survive in the modern day rugby, professional rugby setup, you know?
Yeah. So, Rory, who's next then? Because we did a fan poll earlier in the week. Mike Blair came up kind of resoundingly top with 64%. Then it was Roddy Grant, John DL, and Callum McRae who's got interim charge. I think it's probably pretty damning of Duncan Hodges' chances that he hasn't been put in temporary charge given he's been given the reins previously. Yeah. There was a couple of other shouts in kind of the comments of Ben Ryan was one who I think was interviewed previously before Richard Cockerell. Sean Lanine, someone suggested, but that's maybe the horse maybe gone on that one. So I don't know. What's your kind of take on who should take over?
I mean, I think Mike Blair is a pretty obvious candidate. The issue quite often with the SRU in the past has been it's been the fairly obvious candidate, or they've just kind of grabbed one off the scraped one off the insides of Murrayfield from somewhere. So I mean, and Callum McRae taking over would be, you know, nobody would really be surprised by that. Or, yeah, someone like Mike Blair or John Dale being kind of shunted sideways from another position, kind of proving the old it's impossible to get fired sort of from the SRU thing. I mean, but at the same time, you know, when they did announce Cockerell and Dave Rennie, everyone was like, wow, those are ballsy signings. That's the sort of thing we want to see. So they might go for that. I guess it depends how much cash they've got and who's out there. I mean, there's a few guys who've mentioned on Twitter, someone like, say, Jason O'Halloran, who's got a kind of more of a back attacking play, you know, remit, someone like him, maybe. But I mean, whether he'd be interested, I think he probably interviewed for it at the same time as Ben Ryan and Cockerell did. Whether, you know, all those bridges have been burned. Maybe Jim Mallander fancies taking over. I don't know if he's enjoying whatever it is he's doing at Murrayfield.
I don't know if Jim Mallander enjoys doing anything.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, certainly Mike Blair, in terms of his kind of background with Edinburgh and his kind of attacking pedigree, you would think would be a good fit if he's a great coach. But nobody really seems to know because he's not that experienced. Do you want to give him? Is it time for another rebuilding period at Edinburgh? Because that's what it would be if they brought in someone new. I mean, they've lost a lot of players. But yeah, it was clear when Cockers came in, they needed someone to give them a kick up the backside and he gave them that. But I mean, that's Cockers and Solomon, two kind of old school coaches that they've had. They need someone a bit more modern in the kind of, in the Tooney mindset, if you like, who's open to new ideas and is building more of a kind of, you know, going and learning from other sports and all that sort of modern coaching stuff rather than just shouting at them.
Yeah. Johnny, I mean, from a Glasgow point of view, you've had the internal appointment of someone like Gregor Townsend that's gone extremely well. There's a lot of Edinburgh fans in my mentions on that poll, kind of shouting for a big name and in the words of somebody like Dave Rennie, but that didn't particularly work out very well for Glasgow overall. I don't maybe, I mean, I suppose that from a performance point of view and results point of view, it did work out well. For a legacy point of view and building something longer term at Glasgow, probably not. So what do you think in Edinburgh's interest? Is it an internal appointment to develop a Scottish coach, or do they need to go and find a big name?
I think it depends what they want to do, to be honest. I mean, like Rory says, there's a certain appointment that's going to mean a full rebuild. And do you want to do that in the first year of this new competition? Or do you want to go out and get somebody who you think can make you competitive straight away? Which kind of basically happened with us with Dave Rennie. But then, like you say, once he moves on, and they do seem to move on at a fair rate from the URC, and then are you left with having to do a full rebuild anyway? So there's pros and cons to both. And I think it kind of comes down to what the SRU and what Edinburgh want to do now, whether they want to go into this new URC, starting a full rebuild and just saying, you know, it's a new competition, we've got a new coaching structure, let's just start from the bottom. Or do they want to get into the competition, aiming to get straight into the Champions Cup, compete at the sharp end of the competition, in which case you need to get in somebody that's got the pedigree to do it straight away.
What would your choice be then, Ian?
I selected Roddy Grant from your options. Young up-and-coming coach, knows the place inside out. And also one thing that could be a factor is, Edinburgh fans might want to get a big name. Money. Again, the be-all and end-all. And obviously we know, due to everything that's been going on, money is a bit tight. So I don't think they will massively push the boat out. Also, like Craig said, you know, they've got two massive players to fill there with Rory Sutherland and Duhan van der Merwe. Last year as well, we noticed that their standoff options were basically Nathan Chamberlain or nobody. Once Duhan van der Merwe, Jacko van der Walt got called up. So I do think there needs to be a bit of a player overhaul, and I don't think they will push the boat out hugely. So I think it will be an internal move. So somebody like, I think Roddy Grant would be a good choice, but Mike Blair could also very much get the job. But if you do that, you're disrupting the national team. So that's one thing to factor.
That was one of my shouts, but it will disrupt the national team, and that was Brian Eason. Brian knows Edinburgh. He's coached at Edinburgh before, and he's a well-respected coach. And I think he could probably do something with Edinburgh, but again, he's already, you know, he's in on the Scotland women's side of things now. So it depends if he would. I don't know if they would want to move him at this moment in time. But
what would be your preference then, Craig? As an Edinburgh fan, would it be for? Because it's that difficult, isn't it? Because we've talked for a while now about giving Scottish coaches development opportunities and the ability to step into the big roles, but at the same time, it's a big step up.
It is, but again, we can't go any further down the league than we already are. So it would be an interesting option to bring someone in. We have a strong forward pack. We have a strong forward ethos now that can be continued on. I think we need to bring in someone who's going to open up the back play. So, you know, if we ended up with Mike Blair, I wouldn't be sitting here complaining. And that's one of the reasons I mentioned Brian Eason as well. I don't personally, out of your poll, I went Mike Blair just because, you know, I think it's the easier, least expensive, most bang for the buck sort of move. But the problem you have is if you bring someone in, a big name, pay them big money, you're taking that away from the team. And really it's the guys on the pitch that are going out there that are drawing the people in, the fans in, the people who have just spent all the money on season tickets, who then, you know, that's one of the things that really rips my knitting is the fact that it's quite obvious that they knew Cockerill was going and they kept it all quiet until everybody, you know, look at the record sales of the season tickets, and then all of a sudden, oh, by the way, Cockerill's gone. I think that's a little bit, that's a typical SRU move, not to get sued, apart from
they'll just not let Ian into any more games.
You mean any more?
But yeah, ideally, I'd love to get I'd love to get Scott Robertson over from the Crusaders, but that's not going to happen. So you pretty much know it's going to be someone from within. Roddy Grant might be a great move and might be, but you're going to have to pay money for him to come back over. So I reckon it's going to be an internal one.
Yeah, we also just have to mention Jake White, because this is a vacancy in rugby. So we just Jake White,
Wayne Smith maybe.
Wayne Smith, yeah. Anybody else that has to be linked with a role in rugby anytime one comes up?
Eddie Jones.
Chris Winley Christie, when we need him. Yeah, I thought he was coming riding on the back of Ben Velikop. Come on.
I take it Kingsley Jones is just going to Skype in for anything we need him to do it in.
That's it, yeah.
Special consultancy.
I saw somebody suggest Sean Holly, and I couldn't for the life of me understand where that came from, because I don't think he's coached recently. He's more recent. I mean, if you want someone to come in and do the after dinner entertainment, you're probably going to upset Bruce Aitchison. But he's been doing a lot of comms and singing.
Bruce Aitchison for Edinburgh head coach. There we go.
You've got similar kind of hairstyles. They should have just. I mean, what they probably could have done is gone full Stalin and just said, you know, hushed up that sacked him and just got. Shoved Bruce out there and then said, this is got him to put on an English accent.
Instructed Premier Sports only to shoot him from a distance.
From a distance, yeah. Get an actor in to voice him.
Yeah. Get him to bend down a little bit.
So that's Coxit, as I'm calling it. We'll have more on that, no doubt, and more debate, depending on when Mike Blair's inevitably announced as the new Edinburgh coach in a couple of weeks. The other news today was Xander Ferguson, Ian, has signed an extension to his contract. Now, using our SRU contract translator, I had extension down as a one-year deal, but you think it's two.
Yeah, they said long term, I think, did they not?
Yes, the release email certainly anyway. I think the platform said long term. So I believe
that's 3 years under our translator, but it might be two.
It is, but also we need to remember he's just had a little babby. So he probably doesn't want to up sticks and lose out on free childcare with the grandparents. But obviously it's a good thing for us to sign him back, because we've been hemorrhaging big name players. He's now a Lion, of course.
Now, I'm going to be cynical for a minute, Johnny. And obviously, Xander has been coming to the end of his contract for a while and there's been no news. It's interesting that it's been announced towards the end of the Lions tour, where Xander hasn't maybe made as much of an impact as other players. So you wonder whether or not it's an element of, well, the other offers on the table either haven't transpired or haven't been attractive enough to kind of entice him away from the comfort of Glasgow. I mean, comfort in the nice way, you know, that, like Ian said, he's just had a young baby and you'll have family nearby. But you wonder whether or not he was holding out to kind of see whether or not, you know, things worked well from on the Lions tour and, you know, there were some bigger offers on the table.
Yeah. That's obviously worked for us, hasn't it? So it's pretty cynical, but it's hard to see past it when you lay it out, especially having just watched Sutherland do basically the exact same thing. Glasgow have got so many good props now, I think, and Xander is obviously the core of that. You forget how young he is, he's obviously the sort of the leader of the front row, and he's a Lion now, but I mean, we've got Kebble there, we've got Pirretto, Berger and Jamie Batty coming in, Murray McCallum's come in. So Glasgow's stacked with props, and I can see why Xander would would maybe want to stick around and be involved.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we're being a bit cynical, Rory, but it's actually nice. I mean, we should be happy, I suppose, that the SIU are kind of keeping big names around when, like Johnny was saying, you know, Enbre have hemorrhaged Doohan and Rory Sutherland of late.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were some rumours that Xander had some interest from France, but maybe it was like a Hugh Jones thing where the team that were interested in him got relegated or something and he decided he didn't fancy that. I mean, to be honest, I think someone with his level of natural aggression, you know, French D2 would be like a perfect kind of training ground for him if he wasn't a British and Irish lion. Obviously, you know, he's but I think I'd love to see Zambags tearing it up down there. But yeah, I think it's a good move to Glasgow that they can retain him.
If he moved to D2, he'd have to put a brick in the Zambags.
You would never see him in a Scotland shirt again because I think all the suspensions would carry over to international, yeah, wouldn't
it? I mean, yeah, if he had got a move to France, you know, he could have naturally finished off in D2 like Biggers. He finished off down there, did he not?
Just did, yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, he gradually fought his way down the French leagues.
I think it would have been good for him to scrummage against, you know, playing in the French top 14 would certainly have done his scrummaging some good. I mean, he's already pretty useful, but that would have just been a great sort of proving ground for him and would definitely have helped Scotland. But yeah, as you say, maybe the young family, maybe it was sort of non-rugby reasons that kept him here.
We forget he gets 4 games to scrummage against South Africans now as well from this season. So it's not weekend material to get to the top 14, but it is facing the Springboks 4 times a year, basically. So.
You see as well, speaking of props, I mean, Glasgow lost a fair number. Darcy Ray, Adam Nicol, they've all gone. Aki Sewley has just signed for the Dragons.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, scrummaging, not one of his forties, but running about like a lunatic definitely was.
Craig, where because it was a bit of a, you know, Murray McCallum had been let go and then suddenly pops up at Glasgow as is tradition for Edinburgh cast-offs to have his second wind. You know, do you think that Richard Cockerell kind of maybe having plans to leave has maybe left Edinburgh a bit sparse up front in the scrum?
Well, yeah, now that, you know, because Murray McCallum was always a stalwart of the team, he was always around, he was always there. The problem you have is he never really got a lot of game time. And that was pretty poor for the guy. You know, he's a decent scrummager and he did okay. I think with Suz going, I think we are looking a little bit kind of, there's a lot of weight going down on the shoulders of one younger South African and one aging South African who is halfway out the door. So, you know, we'll have to see where we are. We've got a couple of front rowers coming in, but I just don't know. The problem is, I think we're all a little bit at sea now with Cockers. You know, everyone kind of trusted that Cockers had a plan, and everything was moving forward, and then all of a sudden it's all kind of upside down. So right at this moment in time, I'm not sure where we are.
And I suppose you've now got Pierre Schumann's going to be Scottish qualified. I think he may be, as of next week, Scottish qualified, unless there's a massive injury in the South African front row and they decide to call him up. This is surprising, the third tests.
They would, I'm a great Schumann believer, so I think they would do. They wouldn't do too bad if they called him up.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not. I suppose he's likely to be called up, so it maybe leaves come, you know, the autumn internationals. It's going to leave Edinburgh a little bit light, perhaps.
Yeah, very much so. And I think that's going to be the challenge of whoever's coming in. They're going to have to unless Schumann goes down the route of Van der Vault, where he gets a cap and then he's kind of left off the bench left off the team sheet for a fullback to come in and play at 10. You know, I really don't know. I worry about what they're going to do with Schumann, because I think he's committed himself a little bit too early to Scotland and saying, look, I love it here. I love being here. I love being in Edinburgh. I love everything that's going on around here. And then all of a sudden he gets one cap and then he's kind of left on the sidelines, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Sandy Smith, formerly of the podcasting blog, does his own blog, which is the Borough Watch. If you want to go on there, he's got a squad depth list on there. So, the loose head, you've got Pierre Schumann, Bowen Venter, and Sam Grahamslaw.
Yeah.
Then on the tight head, you've got WPNL, Leroy Atalifo, and Luan De Bruyne. So it's, I suppose you get down beyond those first two choices, Rory, and it's looking a little bit sugary for Edinburgh.
Full disclosure, I've only heard of Schumann and Nell out of that lot. peripheral passing interest in last season.
I thought Grahamslaw was something that you bought instead of coleslaw in Waitrose.
Could be. Yeah, the depth is going to be an issue, but then maybe that's something they're looking at to make a signing. But again, not having any idea of who the coach is going to be, you know, they need to sort that out quickly so that they can, if they're planning to sign anymore. Ironically, Murray McCallum, who can play both sides, would have been a useful person to have.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
Maybe he'll come back. He's only on a 1-year deal. Maybe the new coach will manage to lure him back if he has a good season at Glasgow. But he might just be absorbed into the Warrior Nation.
I'm thinking. Sorry, Johnny. There was, I've forgotten his name now, but there was a Scottish qualified prop played against the Lions.
Nathan Macbeth.
Yes. Yeah. So you know, you never know. He may be if he's not getting on target for a Springbok cap, he might get.
Are we sure this isn't another case of someone being ginger and with Mick in the surname and no, just deciding a Scottish? Or is he actually genuinely Scottish?
Apparently, he's Scottish, isn't he?
Yeah, he played played for under 20s. Yeah,
right
for both.
Yep. Oh, he was that lad, wasn't he? He was. I remember that he was the lad that they brought over from South Africa for the under 20 tournament once, didn't they? And he played a couple of games. Then went back. I remember him now. Yes,
big lad.
Yeah. So who knows? We'll watch this space. Martin Bell says Grahamslaw is a well-known brand of particularly green coleslaw, only available in the Greater Hoyk area. Macbeth is coming to Edinburgh. No, we don't know, Martin. If you know more than us, let us know.
We'll have to Google it now.
We'll have to Google it. One just tiny little bit of news before we move on to the main thing we're going to talk about tonight is Jade Conkle's back and signed for Harlequins after going off to be a firefighter in London. She's done a training and returned to rugby, which is wonderful to see, and be wonderful for the Scotland women's team when the competition start up again. Right, we're going to go on and we'll do this now.
It's the Legally Mandated Lions Chat. The Legally Mandated Lions Chat. We've heard so much about it that it makes us sick, but we've still got a chat about who Gatlin's gonna pick.
Right, we're going to talk about Saturday's Lions test, but by the time most of you are listening to this, it'll be completely irrelevant because they moved the team announcement. So the plan was to record this a couple of days beforehand so people would have a chance to listen. And then we would be predicting our Lions 15s, and that would be a bit of fun. But like I said, 10 o'clock tomorrow, I think the team gets announced, so it's all pretty much moot, our discussion. So two things. First of all, we've got the leaked Lions team that's been leaked to the Times, more on that later, and then also we'll then just do our own kind of 15s based on the tournament so far for a little bit of fun, but we'll talk about the leaked team to start with. So according to the Times, the British and Irish Lions team to face South Africa on Saturday will be Stuart Hogg, Anthony Watson, Elliot Daly and Robbie Henshaw, Duhan van der Merwert, Dan Biggar, Ali Price, Wynne Jones, Luke Cowan-Dickie, Tig Furlong, it's like Tiger without the R apparently, Alan Wynne-Jones, Mario Otoji, Courtney Laws, Tom Curry and Jack Conan. And then on the bench, Ken Owens, Rory Sutherland, Kyle Sinclair, Tag Byrne, Hamish Watson, Ian Henderson, Connor Murray and Owen Farrell. Now, I'm not entirely 100% convinced that is going to be the team, because Russ Petty put something on Twitter earlier that said within that team, there's only one combination that have played together so far on this tour, whereas in previous tours, you're talking double figures before you get into the first test match. Ian, it wouldn't, though, a few people saying this is the kind of crap that Gatland pulls, but it's also the kind of crap that Gregor Townsend likes to pull as well. So, do you see this being the test squad?
I'll believe it when I officially see it. Like you said, a lot of the combinations haven't played together. Robbie Henshaw's not played very often. What I am particularly enjoying is seeing the meltdowns from other countries that Ali Price has been picked. even though he's been far the best scrum half on the tour, and I don't think you can say otherwise.
If you want a meltdown, just look at the top right corner of your screen, you'll get one. Isn't that right, Mr. Manson?
I'm not melting down at all. I have said regularly on this podcast that I am due a fiver because I never even thought that Ali Price should be going. And look at the play that he's been, well, either that or the other two scrum halves have performed incredibly poorly. But I'm over the moon for Ali Price and kind of gutted that I have to say that you were right, Johnny.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I suppose the, if that is the squad, it seems to me that they've decided to do what we've said all along they shouldn't do, which is to try and match the box up front in terms of physicality, Johnny, that they've put Courtney Laws on the flank, I suppose, to counter the South African threat. But you don't, I don't think you can win against the Springboks by trying to match them physically. You have to try and find a way to go around and over the top of them.
Yeah. I don't know, something about it just makes me think that there's just a few too many curveballs for it to be what the actual team's going to be. I mean, we know that Gatland and Townsend, obviously, both like the occasional curveball, but there's a lot in that squad, and it is a lot of looking like we're going to go out and beat up on South Africa, which you're not. Like, plain and simply... No, you're not. And there's all this chat about South Africa. I've got Quagga Smith started at 8, so it's not the hugest pack they could pick, and we can maybe kind of target that. But
let's give him his full title, Edinburgh Reject Quagga Smith.
But yeah, I mean, I think he's obviously still in there for a reason. South Africa have got their bomb squad front row on the bench, so they're obviously coming out to make an impact, and then they're going to bring those guys on and try and blow our set piece away. And I don't think that looking at that and trying to match it is the way to go. But Gatland's the one who's won and drawn the tour, so if that's his team, we'll trust it.
The only thing I can think, Rory, with some of these selections is that if the plan has been from the start that you're going to utilise Finn Russell in some way during games, and they've kept, he's still on tour and is apparently ready for the second test, going to be fit for the second test. And I think you said in the group chat the other day that, you know, you don't, these tours are brutal. You don't keep somebody around unless you're going to use them. So my only thought with this is that they've got a plan to kick behind the Springboks, and they need two kickers in the backfield to do that. And in the absence of Finn Russell, the only person who can do it alongside Stuart Hogg is Elliot Daly. So yeah, that's why he makes it, maybe. That's the only explanation I can see for him at 13, because otherwise, you know, where's Chris Harris?
Yeah, I mean, I thought Daly's been okay in the last couple of games that I've seen him in since they started playing him 13, but there's too much in that team. It's like, what's the movie? Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, you know, where they just release different sets of fake information to see where the leak is. I reckon Gatland's, they've agreed the team in the team meeting, and then Gatland's gone, I've been listening to the Scottish Rugby podcast, I've heard about this thing called the Toonie Tombola. Gregor, give us your five alternate teams and we'll leak them out and we'll see who's a snitch.
And it was Rebecca, I mean, Vardy.
Yeah, like, I mean, Jack Conan at number 8, there's almost no evidence that he needs to be starting at number 8. I mean, yeah. How many times has he played? It feels like he's only played one game and not really done much of anything. So they're throwing him in for the first test. I mean, I get Faletau hasn't been as impressive as everyone was kind of hoping he would be, but I just think it seems weird that the other thing about the combinations as well, the front row combinations, Gatland's pretty astute, and that feels You're right. It feels more like a Townsend thing to do, to just kind of completely ignore the evidence of three, four weeks and just pull something strange out of the air and bamboozle the Springboks.
The big omission for me is Bairn.
Because he's actually been superb, yeah.
Yeah. And as well, you know, he's really good over the ball. He's a line option as well, because, you know, he's like 6 foot five, 6 foot six. But the main thing is he's been playing out his skin. You know, he's just a really good all round, all action flanker and versatile. I think Conan's played twice, and I think he's played really well. But maybe just because Faletau hasn't hit the peaks we were expecting. But yes, I'll let someone else talk now. Sorry for jutting in there. But it's just because I think leaving Bairn out, I think, is just daft.
Yeah. Well, again, that's another signal that it can't be real, because that seems ludicrous. Even not to, yeah. Is he on the bench in that squad, I think, maybe?
He's in the bench. Yeah.
I mean, the bench looks a bit wonky as well. Murray and Farrell as your two replacements.
You're relying a lot on, I suppose you rely. Goal kicking. I suppose, yeah. I mean, that's a Scotland split, right? That you would have Hastings and, you know, Horn or another scrum half on the bench, with knowing that Hastings can come on and cover fullback, and that there's enough coverage on the pitch in someone like, if you have Chris Harris playing, I suppose, like with Elliot Daly, can cover fullback. So I suppose that if they were doing that, there is enough coverage elsewhere on the pitch to fill in. And that Farrell can cover 10 and 12. Otherwise, I suppose with Finn Russell out, unless you're going to put Marcus Smith on the bench, which seems outrageous. I mean, it'd be fun, but it seems outrageous. Then Farrell is the natural choice to be on the bench, because he's the only, unless you're talking about playing Stuart Hogg at 10 in a, you know, Alliance test match, which is utter madness, Craig.
Yes, I've said that many times. I've always preferred my Hoggy at 15, to be perfectly honest with you. You see, this is the whole thing. This is what throws me completely, and what we've constantly gone on about. Everyone says, oh, Mish is too small to go up against the mightier South Africans. And everyone said, well, no, hold on a minute. We're trying to play a different way. You can't match the Springboks up front. You can't take them on heavy, so you're going to go. And that's how it seems to have shown with, for example, having Mish, having the back line that they have, using, you know, okay, fair enough, Doohan out in the wing is a big lad, but he's a fast big lad. But so the six 2 split on the bench is one that's throwing me slightly, because I would have thought it would be nicer to, well, for me, it would be better to see Conor Murray, Marcus Smith, because I thought he did an incredibly good job, and then Daly on the bench as well. So you've got your 10, you've got your 12, you've got your 13, you've got your fullback all covered, and your 9 covered, and drop Ian Henderson. And then you would have Courtney Laws on the bench, have Ty Bairn and Hamish Watson, starting with Conan at the back. So that was my, you know, that's how I would have, if they were going along this line of, we're going to try and beat South Africa a different way, then that's what I would have expected to see a little bit more of, rather than putting a big load of big lads on the pitch, you know.
Yeah, Martin Bell says in the comments, he says, wait for this to come up, loads of mobility in the Lions' 3 forward replacements suggests they plan to keep the pace up front very quick throughout as they move the box around for 80 minutes. Harris' submission is a scandal, I'll give you that. I mean, the only thing I can think with that is that Hamish Watson, for me, is an 80-minute player. So, you know, I'll give you that if there's somebody better than Hamish Watson, by all means, you know, Mish off the bench is a, you know, a useful weapon, but Hamish Watson isn't somebody that fades during matches. He gets, you know, he'll get you a turnover at 80 minutes plus one under the post. So I don't think you lose anything by starting Hamish Watson and playing him for 80 minutes compared to bringing him off the bench late in the game, Rory.
Nope. I mean, yeah, you can see why there's a kind of argument for Curry in there, and it's tricky. Does Watson actually, because he pretty much only plays 7, is he versatile enough to be on a bench? Maybe with a 6-2 split, he is. They've got the luxury of having an extra open side. But Yeah, it does. It does seem a bit. You're not going to beat South Africa up, so why try? And the worry is that if you try and your forwards try and beat South Africa up, then South Africa beat your backs up, and you've only got two replacements on the bench.
Yeah, but then we end up with Hamish Watson at 13, which is what we all want. That's the dream.
Yeah, or Ali Price on the wing again. Mark and Cheslin Kobe. That'll be fine.
Johnny, what were you going to say?
Yeah, like my bench would be a 5-3 split because I can see the theory and the attraction of a 6-2 bench if you're someone like South Africa or England who's going out to beat people up and you're going to bring on another fresh set of forwards and you're going to do it again. If you're going out to smush people, then a 6-2 bench makes sense. If you're the potential smushy, which we are in this situation, you want to have as much cover as you could possibly get, and like an extra back can make all the difference. We saw it. We've seen it on this tour already when we'd gone out with a 6-2 bench and ended up short backs. We went out with a 7-1 bench, which admittedly wasn't through choice, but we've ended up shuffling people around and playing them out of position, and you can't really do that in a test against the Springboks. So personally, I'd have a 5-3 split, but
Who would be your preferred 15 then, Johnny?
You want my whole 15?
Go on then.
Hang on, I wrote it down. So
he's been bombarding me all for the last 6 months with this. He's been looking forward to it.
Suz, Ken Owens, Tyke Furlong. I've got Adam Beard, Maro Itoje, because I wasn't sure about Alan Wynne-Jones. And Adam Beard is the defensive weapon against the Springboks set piece. He's the line-out stopper for a start. He's the maul stopper. He is the best defensive lock I think we've got against the South African set piece. And then I've got Tadhg Byrne, Mish and Faletau. Because you're right, Faletau's been quiet, but you don't see how good he is until you see someone else do it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I think we'll see Conan do it and then go, well, actually, Faletau is quite good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what's your kind of forward pack compared to that then, Craig? Have you got anyone different in there?
I would have put Alan Wynne-Jones in instead of Adam Beard. I think if they're going to fly him out there, they're going to use him. I think he knows what he's doing. I agree with Johnny with Suz. But I'm a cow. Did you put Cowan Dickey in, Johnny?
No, I've got Ken.
I would put Cowan Dickey into the front row.
I've got Cowan Dickey on the bench.
Yeah, I think he has performed. In fact, I would say he's probably going to be the bolter for the test series. I think he's been an absolute fantastic or the star. I think he's had a fantastic set of games. And then I was kind of throwing. I would have rather had. I'm a Conan fan. I would have Conan in the eight instead of Faletau. I would have had Byrne and Watson.
Yeah. Ian, any differences to those?
I started Wynne-Jones at loosehead. I've got Cowan Dickey as well. Also, and not just because of his name. I've got Ian Henderson starting alongside the Itoje at lock. And then my back three was Byrne, Watson and Curry at eight as a wee curveball.
I can see the argument for playing Curry and Watson together.
As well, like one of the things with Henderson is I saw somebody said that Henderson was soft on Twitter and I was like, would you actually say that to him? And if you did, how many teeth do you think you'd have left? It's just chaos. I mean, Henderson as well, he's versatile and can go to flanker if he's injured. I had AWG on the bench because I'm not sure he's going to be fully cardio fit. I think he'll start the second or third test, but I don't think he'll start this one. Mm-hmm.
Ian Henderson, to me, I think the problem with Ian Henderson, why people think he's soft is because of his face. He's got a baby face, so he looks like three small children standing on top of each other in a trench coat.
As well, I think that's a wee bit more mobile as well, because like you were saying there, how you don't want to smash people off the park. Conan, I think, is very unlucky, and that he's basically just a flat out eight. So I've got Faletau on the bench because he can also call up blindside. And my front row bench was Owens, Sutherland, and Kyle Sinclair.
Okay. Rory, any differences to those?
Not really. I'm kind of torn between George and Cowan Dickey in the hooker, just because some of Cowan Dickey's tackling techniques scare me a little bit. But then I kind of picked Farrell at 12, and there's only really room for one of them in my team, so I'm going to probably go for George. But other than that, yes, Sutherland, Furlong, Itoje, Alan Wynne-Jones, and the Byron Watson, Faletau back row.
Yeah,
same as most of the lads.
What then, Ian? Your kind of, don't give us your backs.
Yeah, I've gone Hogg, throwback, Josh Adams, because this league side doesn't have Josh Adams anywhere, and I think that's a bit mental, seeing he's, you know, top try scorer in the tournament.
Chris so Harris, Sean Maitland.
Tommy
Seymour, I mean.
Robbie Henshaw at 12. I picked Doohan bigger in price, just because how can you leave Doohan out? It takes more than one player to tackle him every single time, and that just opens up. You know how like space is key now in rugby matches, because defences are so well organised. If you can clear out straight after him, he's going to make you space by just stomping all over people. And then my back on the bench, I had Conor Murray, Marcus Smith, because he's been fun. And also he's, you know, because he does have actual real pace as well. If you bring him on late in the game, whether you're chasing it or if South Africa are chasing it, you know, he can transition quickly and throw a little bit of flair. And Liam Williams I had on the bench as well, just because he can do wing and fullback.
Yeah. Johnny, your backs?
Exactly the same, except I've got Anthony Watson instead of Doohan. Okay. Just purely because I think he's better under the high ball and he's a better kicker. I don't like this narrative that Doohan's not good under the high ball, because he is, but he's a bit, if he gathers a high ball in the backfield, he's a bit one-dimensional, and admittedly that dimension is he's going to power ahead and take four or five South African bodies with him, but Watson might run, might kick. He's just got a bit more flexibility, I think, so he gets in for me ahead of Doohan. And then I've got Murray, Farrell and Daly on the bench, and that's just purely for the versatility that they could all, well, Farrell and Daly could all cover multiple positions. So
yeah. Craig, any differences for you?
No major differences. I went with Watson on the wing along with Doohan, Hogg at the back, Harris, and then Bigger, and obviously Ali Price. I'm going to say it, Johnny, Ali Price at 9. but on my bench, I would have Marcus Smith, Conor Murray, and I would also have Elliot Daly.
Yeah. Rory?
Yeah, much the same. Hogg. In fact, probably not that much the same. I've gone bigger in price at halfback. Wings, I've gone for Williams, just because I've been slagging him off all week, and Adams. And in the centre, I've gone for Farrell and Harris, because this is a fantasy team. It's not a realistic Lions team. I've just had to throw my bench together there now, and that means I've gone for a 6-2 bench, so you can pretty much disregard everything I said a minute ago.
So we'll see what the actual test team is tomorrow. The plan is that on Thursday evening we're going to do a live podcast that will be live on YouTube for everybody, but available to Patreons only on Facebook and as an audio download as well. And we'll talk in a bit more detail about the South African squad and the actual Lions squad that's been announced as well. We're going to move on. We're going to do this now. Yes, it's Hands in the Ruck time. It's our Any Other Business section of the podcast. And we've had one in on the email. You can email us podcast@scottishrugbyblog.co.uk. This is from Peter Duncan. And I have clarified it is sadly not the Peter Duncan from Blue Peter, but Peter's very welcome anyway. He did apologise for not being Peter Duncan from Blue Peter. He said, my hands in the ruck is Scottish players signing for poor English premierships teams. Both Rory Sutherland and Duhan van der Merwe have signed for Worcester, who are consistently fighting in the relegation zone. I would have thought these two in particular could find a better club. Is this due to the promises of a club on the rise or difficulties finding a club due to England qualified quotas? I want to see Scotland boys challenging for trophies just to see how good a move for Exeter has been for Hoggy and Johnny Gray. Johnny, what's your take on that? Do you think do Scottish lads need to set their sights higher before they jump ship and south of the border?
I think it's probably mostly due to the fact that Doohan's been paid 15% of the entire SRU wage budget by Worcester, if I'm perfectly honest. I think, you know, and it is a really valid point because the guys who have gone to Exeter have done really, really well. And Johnny Gray in particular has developed all aspects of his game at Exeter that he couldn't do at Glasgow because he was relied on to do all the tackling in Glasgow. And had become a bit one-dimensional. Now he's surrounded by better players at Exeter. He's developed other aspects of his game, and it has been brilliant for him and for Scotland, and the same with Hoggy and the same with all the other guys. But not everybody is going to get to a championship-challenging quality of team, unfortunately. And all of the English teams pay a lot more money than we can, so if Doohan's going to get that sort of chunk of cash to play at Worcester, It's hard to argue with his reasoning, I suppose.
I suppose the worry, though, Rory, is that a lot of players that we've seen for Scotland who've been, you know, in the international setup, really kind of key players, have then gone down south and have faded away. I think someone like Josh Strauss, for example, you know, very well at Glasgow, and then kind of went to Sale and slowly drifted away from the international setup.
Yeah, I mean, there's always. It seems to happen. I think part of it's maybe a rating. You know, there's the how other clubs or other management teams rate the Scottish players. I mean, you probably, if you look at the Premiership teams, maybe nobody other than Worcester thought that Rory Sutherland and Doohan were going to be Lions. I bet they could get their pick of the teams now if they were negotiating a new contract. I think, you know, in the past there's been issues. I mean, looking back to the likes of Chris Patterson. You know, we all thought he was amazing up here, but then he kind of went down and was fairly kind of medium at Gloucester. And I think there are, you know, it takes a lot of hard work for some of the Scottish lads to kind of get the respect down there, because, you know, for years some of them weren't that great, and so they were kind of having to go off slim pickings. But we're starting to see now, guys, you know, Hugh Jones getting a good deal with Quinns, and. It was Quincy signed for, wasn't it?
Yeah,
guys. You know, things like that. We're starting to see the players. Finn getting a big contract in France, earning yellow Lamborghini money. I think it's, you know, the guys are starting to get that bit more respect, and yeah, I think that was maybe just, you know, if Sutherland and Doohan were trying to get out from under at Edinburgh, maybe that was all that was on the table at that point. Although, you can see the obvious attraction of a guy like Doohan for any club, really, but for a team that struggles to win games, you know, the difference that he can make tries out of not very much. You know, you give him the ball at close range and you're almost guaranteed, you know, if they're a team that gets into the 22, gets into the 5 metre zone, but it's quite often not coming up with points, you know, a guy like him can make the difference because he did time and time again for Edinburgh.
That would suggest that Worcester are moneyballing this.
Yeah.
Craig, I mean, is it a worry for you that we keep seeing players kind of disappear down south to clubs and maybe fade away a wee bit?
For me, it's probably a 70-30 split. You want to keep all of our players up in Scotland playing for the two teams that we love, and we want to see them out and drawing the crowds, etc. But you also want them to go and experience more different rugby to bring it back for Scotland and actually to to improve Scotland's results. And I think that will happen. Doohan's a different situation. I think Doohan's just gone for the money, and he's gone through, both him and Suz, to be perfectly honest, have gone through a fairly tough time of it, and they realise that their careers could be over with one swift boot to something. You know, it's just one of those situations that can happen. So I think someone comes along and Worcester are rebuilding and are spending money. So I think they've moved at the right. They've taken the opportunity when they could, but it's going to happen. I think we are seeing our Scotland players moving to clubs down south and then also to France, and they're creating a difference, whereas they maybe didn't beforehand, but certainly now. I think it's a career progression is the wrong word to say. I think it's good to get further experience.
Yeah. Ian, I'll start with you then. Your hands in the ruck this week.
I don't actually think of anything, just everything. You know, it's the Twitter echo chamber.
Lions team selections.
Yes, yeah. Even though I tweeted one myself, just as somebody would end up asking eventually. One thing, I believe this was one that was submitted to the Hugh Dan fans. It might have been Martin. The preemptive rage of Scotland fans about the team before it's even been selected. So, obviously we've discussed some of the guys we want in there. I think a few of us picked Chris Harris, but it's better than Nout, and we had Nout for the last eight years basically. Yeah. So, yeah. Can we just take a chill pill here? This is the thing. It's a ridiculously good set of players to pick from. We can go all right. I really like Elliot Daly as a rugby player. My only concern playing him at 13, I actually think 13's his best position going forward, but I don't think he's a great defender. I think he gets himself out of position at times, and he misses some tackles you'd expect somebody playing in that position to make. And obviously, South Africa's all about Jim Hamilton's favourite word, the physicality. So if he messes that up, that's going to be a problem. But otherwise, going forward, he's very strong, but I just... There's so many good players here, and you can pick and choose and be. Don't be an asshole like some of our neighbours who just completely disparage people. I've seen people going, Ali Price isn't fit to lace Conor Murray's boots. Well, Ali Price, Conor Murray only had two good games during the Six Nations, and there were plenty of Ireland fans saying that he should be papped. I mean, Jameson Gibson Park even started a couple of times. I think Murray was maybe struggling with injury the first game or so. But then he came back and he wasn't that good. I know, but just because their favourites aren't being picked, that's them throwing their toys at the pram. I even saw somebody saying, oh yeah, I can't wait to see Colby stepping Doohan again. They've not been on the pitch at the same time, you halfwit.
Maybe he remembers it from schoolboy South African.
Yeah, I was like, well, I was going to bring back, was this in a uni game you saw 10 years ago?
Speaking of a bit of Scottish fan, Johnny, maybe we should talk about your hands in the ruck.
Mine's a bit more general than that, and I don't know if people are especially precious about the Lions or if my jokes about the Lions just aren't funny, but four or five times probably in the last few weeks, I've tweeted something that I thought was mildly entertaining about the Lions and got just everyone telling me I'm being very un-Lionsy. You can't say that. You're supposed to love everybody in the Lions. Stop saying that. Because the first one, I think I tweeted saying, if I was Dan Bigger and Josh Adams, in every game plan meeting, I would say to Owen Farrell, listen, Owen, if we get a penalty inside the 22, I think you should ask if time's on and then do a cross kick. And the English got their hands on that and they did not like it at all. And I was like, guys, I thought it was quite funny. And then it seems to happen about once a week. And I love the Lions. I'm like a fully bought-in Lionsy person, but I also quite like winding people up, and everyone seems to be really precious about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, nobody... I don't think at the minute... I don't think it's not like other tiers. I don't think anybody's genuinely going to start supporting South Africa in Scotland unless you're the chap that Johnny and I engaged with today who is an ultra kind of nationalistic Scot who believed it was a British imperialist project, completely ignoring the fact it's Irish as well, and the feelings they might have about that sentiment. But I think, yeah, it's, you know, I don't think anybody's seriously talking about supporting South Africa right now, and I don't think that, I think there'll be enough representation in this Lions team to kind of negate that anyway. But it's still funny to joke about it though, Johnny, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I thought, but maybe I'm just not funny, I suppose, that there is an element of that.
I think it would be hilarious. You know, like each nation sort of, I don't know if they've done it this year, but you know, they suggest a song from each country to sing. See if one of the Irish said, "Oh, come out you black and tans." That would be hilarious.
Yeah, I bet Ian Henderson would love that.
the three children that make up his body would be. Craig, your hands in the ruck.
I unfortunately, my hands in the ruck is a bit of a personal one, and I'm really, 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 really upset about it. And that is having to agree with both rugby royalty in the comments section of Johnny McGinty and Stephen Jones, who have both said Ali Price should be starting at nine at the test for the test. The test squad, and I had to agree with them, and I'm really, really, really disappointed in that.
Well, stop clock, Craig.
I just, Stephen Jones, just every time he just breathes on a mic makes me angry, and to have to agree with him is just doing my head in. So
the only thing I can think of, it was a moment of clarity between glasses of port.
it was either
going and seeking help, or it was that Ali Price was a starting nine for the Lions. Joe, it was one of the two.
I was just hoping that they were going to, so some of the South African authorities were going to break down his door, because he keeps advertising on his podcast, etc., that he talks on, that they're breaking the non-alcohol embargo in South Africa, and keep, oh, such and such brings me a bottle of wine, and such and I think, Get in there with the big long sticks and start rattling them.
He is to rugby what Katie Hopkins is to international relations. So, you know,
send him home,
deport him like Katie. Deport Stephen Jones campaign starts here.
Craig, stop winding him up. Like, you know, he listens.
We've had a review from him. I think
you're the last one standing. Come on.
I'm not blocked by him yet, which is...
He hasn't blocked me either, but then I've not engaged with him on Twitter because I can't be just...
I don't either.
Didn't you?
No. I think he just heard about me saying what they wrote on his Wikipedia page. And don't shoot the messenger, all right?
I just made a reasoned point about Hamish Watson versus... I can't even remember who it was. It was the last tour, and I just said something really mild about Hamish Watson, and then he blocked me.
Speaking of, is Quagga Smith too small to be playing for South Africa? Seeing as they've picked him at eight.
Too small to be playing for Edinburgh.
Edinburgh reject.
Edinburgh reject, Quagga Smith. Rory, your hands in the ruck.
We've pretty much covered them all. I mean, I'll just add Matt Dawson to the list because his Lions 23 was hilarious as well. But as it is kind of any other business, I don't know if any of you, has anyone not seen the latest Lions video on YouTube?
Not yet, no.
Right, if you've not seen it then, can you guess who Rory Sutherland's best mate in camp is?
It better not be our Owen Farrell.
There's footage of them playing pool, cuddling, laughing and joking.
Please stop Courtney Laws.
Nail on the head there, Johnny.
Suz. Oh, he's gone down in my estimation.
YouTube rabbit holes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to watch that now.
That's upsetting. Alan Robertson says, hands in the ruck. You only have to watch Tom Curry to understand why he's first choice. That's his hands in the ruck. People saying that.
Did you see Kev Miller's stat off? Like, so Hamish Watson, who I still think whenever he's played has made the most tackles per game, or he certainly has two or three that I've watched, hasn't missed a single one. And Tom Curry has missed something like eight, I think.
Hamish Watson hasn't missed a tackle in 2 years now, apparently.
Yeah.
And hasn't conceded a penalty in, I can't remember, this, like his a number of games.
Life.
Yeah.
apart from his debut, Scotland debut.
Debut against Italy, yeah. That wasn't like, his fault, bless him.
Ever since then, he's like, you know what, I'm staying the hell away from all these.
he got a look from Vern Cotter after that game and thought, never again. My hands in the ruck was a very Brexity article on Rugby Pass, and I say Brexity in the loosest sense of the world, more just the kind of the good old days sense of Brexit, that it was somebody had posted saying that they were appalled by the amount of sledging that goes on in rugby matches these days, and that never went on in their day. And I was like, I played rugby to like under 16 level, right, in the 90s, and sledging was ever present, even at like when I was 12 and playing rugby. You would sledge and swear at each other. Just
they should hear some of the stuff that me and Craig say about each other. Never mind the opposition.
Well, I was gonna say that's something else absurd. I remember a touring match once came to Berwick. As a touring team, youth team came to Berwick once, and they only had 13 lads in the team, so they lent a couple of players over. It was me and a couple of other lads, and we just spent the entire time abusing our own teammates on the other side, which is really good fun, and telling the other team, the touring team, all the names to call them that would really wind them up. So it's just ridiculous. I think it just winds me up in the rugby. Rugby's particularly bad for it. I'm sure all sports are to a certain extent, but rugby seems particularly bad at people kind of harking back to the good old days that never actually bloody existed in the first place.
There is one part of the good old days that is true, is that the tackle height was slightly lower. People was, tackled yeah. around the legs. And well, the scrums went down straight away, and
they just go on with it.
Do you hear the advice that John McGinn gave to Stephen O'Donnell when Jack Grealish came on when Scotland were playing England at the football a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
He's just like, yeah, it's like, right, don't wind him up. Like, because if you wind him up, he gets really angry. He's really good when he's angry. Just compliment him. So Stephen O'Donnell apparently spent like the last 20 minutes of that game just going, you get really nice calves. Your hair's lovely. Like, what are you using your hair? It's lovely looking, by the way.
That's the new stat.
Reverse sledging.
Reverse sledging, yeah.
I think that would work on Hoggy.
Yeah. On that note then, that's it for this episode. Like I said, we'll be back on Thursday evening to talk about the Springboks and the Lions team, however that might turn out. Thursday evening, so we'll be live on YouTube, and then for Patreons, that'll be live on the Facebook page that we have for you, plus we'll make it an audio download afterwards. I'm away next week, so John's in the hot seat for a kind of review of the first Test match, and then we'll be back after that again. Normal service will resume. John will try not to get us banned from Facebook again. For the moment, though, it is goodbye from me, and goodbye from Ian, Johnny, Craig, and Rory.
Goodbye.
Bye.